Did you know that your gut is directly connected to your brain and can contribute to anxiety, stress, and depression, which, by the way, can also impact your sexual health? So here's my secret weapon for gut health, Just Thrive Probiotic. Now listen up. Just Thrive isn't just any ordinary probiotic. It is the only one that survives your stomach acid and reaches your gut 100% alive. All those others, the ones that come in fancy drinks or you gotta refrigerate, nope, that's not even a thing. This is the one. I've noticed significant changes to my overall health. Like, this might be TMI, but I'm way more regular and my skin is glowing. Think of Just Thrive like your personal gut gardener. It maintains the health of your gut by weeding out the bad bacteria that causes all those digestive issues and then replenishes the good, making it a total game changer for your digestion, your immune system, your skin, even your mood and sexual health. And if you want to check out my episode with Just Thrive's founder, Tina Anderson, we talk all about how gut bacteria plays a crucial role in your overall happiness, including your sex life. Because a healthy, balanced gut means less stress and more energy. So if you want to check it out, I'm offering a deal for my listeners. You can save 20% off site-wide at justthrivehealth.com with the promo code SEXWITHEMILY. That's 20% off on the probiotic that's truly changing lives and making waves in the wellness community. Everyone's talking about it. Don't just take my word for it. Try it for yourself. Go to justthrivehealth.com. Use promo code SEXWITHEMILY for 20% off. Thanks for listening to Sex with Emily. On today's show, I'm hosting pelvic floor physical therapist Heather Jeffcoat to talk about the importance of pelvic floor health for men, for women, for everyone. We also talk about sex after having kids, painful sex and ways to get around it, and why Kegels aren't for everyone. All this and more. Thanks for listening.
Into his eyes. They're the eyes of a man obsessed by sex. Eyes that mock our sacred institutions. Bedroom eyes, they call them in a bygone day.
Hey, Emily, you got a boyfriend?
Because my man E here, he just got his heart broken. He thinks you're kind of cute.
A girl's
got
to have her standards. Oh, my.
Do women know about shrinkage?
Isn't it common knowledge?
What do you mean, like laundry? It shrinks?
Can we not talk about sex so much?
Are you kidding me?
Oh, my God, I feel so good.
Being bad feels pretty good.
But you know, Emily's not the kind of girl you just play with.
You're listening to Sex with Emily. We're talking about sex, relationships, and everything in between. For more information, go to sexwithemily.com. You can subscribe to our podcast, our newsletter. And as far as social media, we are at Sex with Emily on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and all the places that you are scrolling. I'm there to answer your questions, to entertain you, to help you have better sex and relationships. I'm really excited for our guest today, Heather Jeffcoat. She's the author of Sex Without Pain, a self-treatment guide to the sex life you deserve, and a recognized expert in the field of pelvic health physical therapy. She's a physical therapist and specializing in pelvic floor health. And I'm so excited you're here because, God, we have a lot of questions for you. We've never had a physical therapist specializing in pelvic floor health here. I mean, we know so many women suffer from pain. Pelvic floor pain, pain during sex, and I feel like you are going to be the answer here for so many women and men who are dealing with pelvic floor issues. So welcome to the show, Heather.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, we are all like, oh my God, we have so many questions. So I would like to hear your story on how you get into pelvic floor health.
So my backstory goes like this, where I went to physical therapy school so many years ago. I was at Duke University, and they have a lot of lectures, a lot of sort of advanced opportunities for you to explore what they used to call women's health at the time within your curriculum. And I think at the time it was really one of the few physical therapy schools that had that in their curriculum. I had knew nothing about it when I first started PT school. I thought I wanted to do pediatrics or sports medicine. And you just kind of get all this exposure and you realize, wow, this is a really underserved population. Yeah. And, beyond that, you can spend so much time with them. This isn't a population where you can be really like rushed into, you know, your treatments, and you can't have like three people in an hour and, you know, just make it feel so much like a mill, right? Like so much of what physical therapy has become. It really also provided me the opportunity to be one-on-one with patients in the way that I desired to be with them, which is to truly help them one-on-one and not pass them off to unlicensed providers. Yeah. To do what should be skilled clinical interventions.
Why do you think it is so underserved and misunderstood, pelvic floor health?
I think it's that muscle that you don't learn a lot about in most people in PT school or in medical school. It's kind of, it's just there, and you might like cut through it to do surgery, but nobody really is studying the function of it. Okay. And so it's just, it's not understood. And, you know, if you think about what its functions are, which are to support bowels and bladder and sexual function, people don't want to talk about any of those things.
None of those things. It makes sense. I guess it makes sense. And this is, we're talking about for men and for women. But correct. Most of your clients are women, correct?
Yeah, the majority in my practice I see are women, mostly with sexual dysfunction.
Okay, so let's talk about that, because, you know, it's been widely studied and known that and I talk about this on the show a lot, 80% of women experience some kind of pain during sex, during intercourse, or anything relating to sex in their life. Some women all the time, some women just, you know, here and there in their life, but women will experience pain. I want to ask you questions about vaginismus and vulvodynia and just all these misunderstood things about women that I just think that it's amazing the work you're doing to help them. They just don't know where to go, or they go to their gynecologist, which I think is like our one-stop shop for the vagina, vulva, all pelvic floor, which it should not be. So,
right. And so in med school, first of all, there's very little talk about pelvic floor things. I know I'm married to a physician, so I've asked him personally, how much did they talk about the pelvic floor? Not much.
It's like one day before lunch.
Probably. Yeah. It's like a 1-hour lecture.
Right, exactly.
And, you know, they're covering so much in 4 years of med school. So you're really supposed to learn these things when you go into residency. And so these would be the OBGYNs, right? Or the urologist too, because I do a lot of urologic pain things, which also feed into sexual pain as well. And these, but we'll talk about OB-GYNs, for example. They're going to school to learn to deliver babies safely, to keep women safe during their pregnancy, to make sure that the babies are born, you know, safe, that everybody's safe during that time period, and then to help with, you know, vulvovaginal health. But they're not, they're swabbing, right? They're looking for infections. That's kind of what their training is. They're not looking for contributors to pain if it's not related to an infection.
Right.
So, you know, they don't understand the musculoskeletal system and how that can contribute to pain. Those are not the experts for that. But there are muscles there that can contribute to pain and can affect bowel and bladder function and sexual function.
Right.
So, you know, but they just don't have that level of training. And so you just hope maybe they're in a good residency program that is a part of their training. But a lot of them go through and they're just looking for like swab this. Right. Oh, well, it's negative. So I don't know why you have pain. Oh, it must be in your head. You must go need to see a psychologist because all my tests show you don't have pain.
Oh, so all these women aren't psychologists unless they know to come see a pelvic floor specialist.
Yeah, a lot of Googling to diagnose themselves.
I mean, I didn't even really know about this specialty until a few years ago, until I just started, you know, meeting and doing this work. And it seems like it's becoming more and more common, but your name has always come up. So that's why I'm thrilled that you're here. So tell me about a typical patient that comes to you, if there is a typical one. She's experiencing pain. The doctor says nothing. Oh, it's in your head. And then what happens?
Yeah, so the more classic, typical, I could say, would be someone with vaginismus, for example, or vulvodynia.
Let's talk about what those are, because they come up a lot, but let's kind of break it down for people.
They do, and a lot of physicians still misuse them. So, you know, vulvodynia, by definition, is vulvar pain, and there's different subtypes. You can have provoked or unprovoked. So that just means that provoked means that it only hurts if something comes in contact with the area. Unprovoked is, it's irritated, hurts all the time. Like, these are the women that end up, like, they can't wear pants, and then all of a sudden now they can't even wear underwear, and they're like, I know when they walk in the office because they're wearing a skirt and they don't have any underwear underneath, because anything up against their vulvar region causes discomfort, and forget about trying to have sex because they're already in so much constant pain at baseline.
Right.
So that would be one subset. Vaginismus is vaginal muscle guarding. So and that, really, these are just descriptions of pain. They don't really say why is the pain there, and that's our goal in the evaluation, is to determine what could be driving that pain. So typically these women, let's just kind of go back. For me, the simplest thing out of any of it is vaginismus.
Okay.
It only hurts if they try to have sex or put a tampon in, if it's really severe. And, you know, I ask their history to start off, and then I do a 2-part physical examination to try to determine what could be driving it, because it's just not all about what's happening
external?
Around the vagina. Yeah.
Right, okay.
So the first part is more of like a general orthopedic exam, where I'm looking at their posture and muscle imbalances with strength and flexibility, like abnormal tissue tension externally, like in the vulvar region, because some some things can drive their pelvic pain. Like why are they having pain? Why do the muscles get overactive or tight or short, however you want to call that? There could be some things with our posture.
It could be posture, right? That's a lot. The way we walk, the way we pronate,
or sit too long, or doing too much Pilates, like over-recruitment, making muscles, you know, just not, you know, muscles need to be able to contract, but they also need to be able to relax. This is a very important concept when we're getting in more to talking specifically about the pelvic floor.
There's nothing quite like sinking your teeth into a good sandwich. But listen, carb guilt is real. I'm someone who's very invested in my health, and I like to get my carbs from oats and beans and fruits and not bread. But I love bread. So here's my hack. Thanks to Hero Bread, you can enjoy your favorite bready delights without the carb consequences. Hero Bread has turned those carby, empty-calorie bread products into fluffy, delicious breads that boast 0 to 1 net carbs per serving, 0 grams of sugar, and are packed with loads of fiber and protein. The first time I tried their white bread, I was skeptical. Could it really taste good with such impressive nutritional stats? Well, I'm pleasantly surprised to say it absolutely does. The texture is just phenomenal. It's like this soft, airy, and it just toasts up like a dream. I've whipped up everything from grilled cheese to PB&J and even made enchiladas, wraps, and tacos with their tortillas. Each time, Hero Bread has been a game changer. And here's a kicker. Despite its light texture and great taste, Hero Bread fits perfectly into my health goals. It's been adding more fiber to my diet while keeping the sugar at bay. Whether I'm packing a picnic lunch, planning a road trip snack, which I often do, or prepping French toast for breakfast, Hero Bread is my go-to. So whether you're craving a classic sandwich, a burger, or a hearty bun, or even indulging in a low net carb croissant, Hero Bread is something for everyone. And I highly recommend checking their monthly small batch drops out so you can try goodies like the 1 gram net carb Hero Cheddar Biscuit and so much more. You won't believe what they have. So you ready to kick carb guilt to the curb? Head over to hero.co and snag 10% off your order with the code Emily. That's Emily at hero.co.
You know, one major thing that I look at too is like their muscle imbalances and strength and flexibility. So do they have the ability to lift their leg up and keep their pelvis stable, for example. Right. And most of my patients classically cannot do that. Okay. They're very weak in their ability to stabilize their core. So that's a kind of red flag for me and other things that would need to be worked on eventually.
Right.
And then the second part of the physical exam is a pelvic floor muscle exam.
Okay.
So that would be one gloved lubricated finger intravaginally and to determine if they have like sort of a high state of like guarding or tightness or shortness in the muscle. Can they contract it? Can they relax it? Does it hurt when I try to stretch it? Wow. I also am looking inside for trigger points because those are muscles, right? Just like you can get trigger points in any muscle in your body, the pelvic floor is not immune to that pathology. So looking for trigger points and how their body responds if I try to do a trigger point release. So it's very like methodical in how I go around and identify that. And
it's like a pelvic floor massage. Do you do that? And you can kind of isn't there certain traumas that can get stuck in there? Like I have friends who have sexological body workers and I know there's a lot of different kinds of ways to go about this, but they've said that there's stuff you could have a tampon that hurts, you know, you put in when you're like 13 and it.
Right.
And puts, that, and then you could release that pain and, or
yeah.
Is that,
well, there are so many different reasons someone might have vaginismus. So in their history, it could be a trauma, but a trauma doesn't mean that there was sexual abuse necessarily. Right. It could be like a traumatic first pap smear or a traumatic just first attempt at intercourse. There's a lot of variations in hymen.
Yeah.
So someone may have very thick hymen and it can be very painful. So it can just be that experience of pain with that first contact. And beyond it being thick, there's anatomical variations called like septate, where it's sort of like really thick, but with holes poked in it, but it's like a really thick membrane or imperforate or, you know, just different presentations that can create a lot of pain. And when you experience pain in that area, you get muscle guarding. You know, other things could be like
muscle guarding, meaning they're like tense, they're sort of building up this wall around it. They sort of have built a system for dealing with it. So they're tensing up and the way that it's now it's growing, I guess, or the way things are shaping over time from having to overcompensate for
in a sense, when you experience pain anywhere in your body, what does your body do? What do the muscles do around it? They contract. They guard. They're trying to protect that area. So I use a lot of orthopedic examples to help normalize it for patients that this is really just a muscle that we're dealing with. We're not dealing with anything weird. It just is in an area you're not used to talking about and people aren't used to really evaluating or thinking about. But, you know, take the example of somebody that herniates their disc. With a disc herniation, you don't damage the muscle.
Right.
It's a disc protrusion out of like its anatomical location, pinching on a nerve, creating pain. But you always have muscle guarding around that. But the person didn't injure the muscle. But the muscle, it now does need to be treated because it is reacting to the injury. And you can't just, you know, treat the herniated disc without the associated muscle compensations that went through that. And so, you know, it could be a trauma. It could be a urinary tract infection, a yeast infection, even one. Most typically, my female patients have this like chronicity, like multiple urinary tract infections in their history. But it could just be one time
in their life, something happened and
or maybe they fell. Like I've had patients where like they can't remember any infections or any trauma, but they're like, but I did like fall snowboarding really hard on my tailbone when I was 14, but they weren't sexually active.
Right.
So the first time they tried to have sex when they were 19,
They
had a lot of pain. And so maybe that was it. And, you know, when you fall on your tailbone, you have lots of pelvic floor muscles back there that are attaching to your coccyx.
And I fall all the time. Who knows what it's from? How do you even remember that?
It's
amazing what you can unearth because, clearly our gynecologists, you know, I feel like there's just so much more that I've been learning in my listeners who are following along that you just can't. We mostly go to the gynecologist when we think of sexual health. We're like, I go once a year. I get my pap smear. I get tested for STDs. And that's where we stop. But like, there's this like this no-go zone or this misunderstood zone called our pelvic floor, which is so freaking important. It's like where all the magic happens. It's why women can't have orgasms or have pain or trauma or even in their heads around sex. And it's like I can't even imagine what goes on in your office, what you might be releasing in there with all the power and energy that women store in there. It's pretty amazing.
And for me, vaginismus, I would say, is like the simplest diagnosis. And when I first started, I was like, oh man, someone with vaginismus, like, what am I going to do? Because it used to be so hard for me until I figured it out. And now it's like so easy, like for me, vaginismus.
You can just what do you do then? You do this series of exercises? Yeah. How do you?
Yeah. So for example, as I'm evaluating them, if they are able to do an intravaginal muscle exam that first visit, then as I'm treating them or as I'm evaluating them, I should say, I'm also treating them. And then I'm talking to them about how they can try to do what I'm doing, but at home, to try to help build on their therapy sessions so that they always have a home program.
Right.
And the tool that they're typically using is called a dilator.
Okay.
And specifically, if they have vaginismus, usually they get a full kit, of which it starts a small size, usually the size of a tampon, and then it gets progressively larger.
This is what I've heard. So it's a dilator. They take it home. This is also in your book. Or I just saw that your book is like, I feel like everyone could do these kind of stretches and these exercises in sex without pain. But you send them home with a dilator and it builds up. There's different sizes and they just kind of practice inserting it.
Yeah, so I teach them, you know, you had mentioned like intravaginal massage, or I forget what phrase you used, but there's, you know, I'm taking massage principles and applying them to the pelvic floor, but I wouldn't tell people that I'm like doing intravaginal massage necessarily. You know, like
people wouldn't come.
Yeah.
But then, no, because they'd be like,
might, but not the people I want to see.
Exactly. Like, they'd be like, oh no, I'm already afraid of that. That's weird. But it's like, I feel like if you have any woman in your office, there's probably something to release. There's probably something off. Maybe a little bit with our pelvic floor.
Right. With most women,
yeah.
I think so. Because even if they don't have painful sex, like if they're peeing like more than 8 times a day, like people, they're like, oh, that's the way it's always been since I was a kid. I'm like, yeah, but that's not normal.
But what could that be?
High tone, I wouldn't say high tone, like overactive pelvic floor muscles. Like that is the root of a lot of these problems, are muscles that are over-recruited, just not allowing like a good relaxation, constantly stimulating maybe nerves in the area. So they can get all sorts of what primary care practitioners or OB-GYNs might think of, like, oh, that's weird. Like maybe they go to psychology, like persistent genital arousal disorder, for example.
Tell me about that. Yeah.
Oh, that's like a crazy maker for patients. And it's so sad because it is a overactive pelvic floor issue. They basically have spontaneous orgasms.
I've heard about this, right?
Yes. And it really, they withdraw socially because they don't know, can they go to a movie with their friends? Right. Because if they have an orgasm in the middle of a quiet scene, like they can't.
Right. What do you do? Right.
And so it's heartbreaking for me because it's something that can be treated. And it's not just with the manual, like hands-on therapy that we do. There's other modalities that we can use to help like calm like the nervous system and the pain, because they're very anxious, and that anxiety also can help ramp up their pain. And, you know, before we started recording, you and I were talking about that study that I came across on anxiety and women. And this was not related to sexual function in any way. It was just looking at muscle activity in women with anxiety, and that the first muscle that becomes like engaged in when one becomes anxious is their pelvic floor. And so if you're already having problems in your pelvic floor and now your pelvic floor is getting more engaged, and it's just going to make your problems worse, and then you just get into this feedback loop.
That's fascinating to me, because I feel like, first of all, who doesn't have anxiety? Raise your hand. And then the fact that women are contracting those, I mean, I feel like it's like that holding my breath thing. Like I feel like I try to breathe through my pelvic floor, but I think that a lot of people do that as well. And then I think that also contributes to, tell me if you agree with this, that why a lot of women just kind of feel numb. Like maybe just generalized, they don't have desire, or they think, you know, and they don't.
Well, if they have pain, for sure, because it's a deterrent. Like why would you want to go do something that hurts you? And, you know, when you're in a relationship, it really can affect that. And then the partner will start to take that, you know, personally in a lot of cases. Yeah. And, you know, I've seen many patients going through divorces where one of these primary drivers was this just constant sexual, you know, issues, like they couldn't have sex, or, you know, she would always push him away. And, you know, when you push someone away, I've seen with lots of patients, and they've talked to me about it, when you have pain, you're not just pushing away for sex, you're pushing away for a lot of things.
Yeah.
Because you're kind of always afraid if you show a little bit too much, like a, you know, adoration or something, then they might be like, oh, she's excited and now we can have sex. So they kind of like shut down altogether, not just in the bedroom.
Yeah, they don't know how to explain what they want, so they're just like nothing because it's painful. And
yes, and so I do encourage my patients to explore non-painful ways to be intimate. And, you know, I'm somewhat limited. I have more experience just because I've been doing this a long time, but I'll refer to local like sex therapists to help them work through, you know, maybe non-touch or just non-penetrative intimate goals.
Right. It doesn't have to just be
exactly.
Get them back on board.
Exactly.
Get them back in touch. Okay, so we talked about vaginismus. We talked about the dilators. So people would go home with that. Just going back to that. So that would be one part of it, or that would be the part of it that would help them get comfortable again with insertion.
That would be one of their like primary core home program tools.
Okay.
Definitely. And then, you know, beyond that, then we're addressing some of these other contributing factors that we found, like with core stability, because like, why are their muscles gripping? You know, so some people can slip and fall on their tailbone and they're fine, but then why do other people just persist in this cycle of pain or muscle guarding? And it's because different things are driving it. So maybe one person was a little bit stronger going into their fall than the other person.
Right.
So that weaker person
just
needs more care after. So, but yes, the dilators are the primary goal. And I would say the dilators are 80% of getting them better.
Okay.
And so, you know, in my book, when I talk about the dilators, I talk about different techniques that are pulled, not just massage techniques, but also like some neuromuscular stretching techniques, way to stretch the muscle, which is a better way to stretch than, you know, maybe just like inserting the dilator, mm-hmm. which is instructions that come on a box of dilators if you buy them, like insert and hold it for 10 minutes. And, you know, for me, I'm like, I'm a physical therapist. I don't hold stretches for 10 minutes. And part of that is trying to desensitize. But a lot of the truly vaginismus patients, it's not like an oversensitivity. It's not like the nerves overfiring.
Right.
It truly is like a state of the muscle that needs to be
opened
physically
up again.
Manipulated
right.
and stretched and massaged. And so I go through like a program that's, you know, outlined like step one, step two, step three, step four, et cetera. And then also, how do you progress from one size to the next? Because you can't just stretch with a tampon size and then go home and try to have sex with your husband, who's, you know, maybe the largest guy out there.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's a kit that gets gradually larger. The kit that I use in my office is good for like I'd say 90% of my patients. And then I do sell individually two sizes larger, which covers most people by that point.
Okay.
And then, you know, if they need something bigger than that, then I send them to a sex shop and I'm like, just try to find
like
a dildo or a
vibrator
that's larger than that, because that's the biggest dilator I'm aware of.
Right. So. Okay. Now, what about using, I know you use the In Control also. How do you work? Use it with your patients?
Yeah. So InControl has a lot of products. And so I use their incontinence line, the Intone and the Apex M. I'm a huge fan of for incontinence. And then for sexual function, I do use the intensity. I recommend the intensity to patients, but not for patients early on that are having sexual pain.
Not for pain.
No, because,
not for pain.
Because the
for incontinence.
Yep. And because the intensity has both that vibration function and the muscle stim function. So for someone with pain, I'm not wanting to stimulate their muscles. They're already having these issues with over-recruitment, most likely, of the pelvic floor, right? Sort of under-recruitment of their proper core stabilizers and over-recruitment of their pelvic floor. So I always like describe to them, I'm like, it's like your pelvic floor is holding on for dear life inside your pelvis, trying to do all the work because your larger muscle groups on the outside are not doing what they're supposed to do. So I definitely don't want them using the intensity to try to cure that sexual dysfunction because of the pain. And anybody with pain or like even
don't
urinary.
Don't do your kegels. I was telling you that sometimes I don't remember what it was. But like, you can't. Not everyone can do kegels. I'm like, I know. There's many times you shouldn't do kegels,
right? So and that would be one of the instances because the muscle stim contracts the muscle or creates that muscle contraction. It facilitates it, and so it'll just make those muscles shorter and tighter and just delay them healing from their problem if they're using that device. And the same thing goes with anybody that has like a vulvodynia or interstitial cystitis or painful bladder syndrome, a urinary urgency and frequency. None of those women should be starting off using an intensity if they have any of those problems.
Okay.
Or even any just like chronic pain in the area. You know, even women that have endometriosis, they have chronic pelvic pain. I would not recommend an intensity for them outright. Although I tell a lot of these women, I'm like, but when you graduate, I think it's a perfect
that's your
thing.
Bonus. Go buy yourself one. It helped me too a lot. Like it helped me strengthen just my pelvic floor. I wasn't exercising as much at the time, and it just helped me with a lot. Like, it helped me with orgasm, urinary incontinence, all this stuff.
Oh, and it definitely does. And I've had women that come with diminished orgasm as another diagnosis that I see somewhat regularly.
Yeah, tell me about that. Let's talk about orgasm. So do you have women who, like, can orgasm, and then you help them get there?
So it is hard. If they have anorgasmia, meaning they can't orgasm at all, that is a challenge.
Yes.
And so I have a physician locally that I refer to have them checked for hormones and to see if there's any deficiency there, because women need testosterone too.
Yes.
So a lot of times they might have some testosterone deficiency, and that improving that balance can help bring some of that back. But physical therapy alone,
it's not going to be the only thing.
Not with anorgasmia, I would say. I have not been a miracle worker with that yet, but I'm hoping one day I can be.
Well, I'm sure that there are, maybe they don't tell you this, but I can imagine just women becoming more in touch and opening up and then releasing the pain. They're having more.
Well, I'm so glad you mentioned that, because I had a woman call me one time and she's like, I can't have orgasms. And, you know, this was right when I was talking about the intensity, and I was like, oh, I think the intensity is your answer. But I'm like, you really should come in. I should evaluate you. And then she came in, and it was just, normally I do 90-minute evaluations. We just did a quick 60 because she really was only interested in getting the intensity. And then she had pain. She had pain with penetration. And I'm like, that's probably why you're not able to orgasm, because that pain is overriding that pleasure, and you need to address the pain. And so that particular one, it was like 3 or 4 sessions, I hardly saw. And then she bought the intensity, and she was good to go. She was so excited. You know, we spread out her visits.
Right.
Money was an issue, and so we needed to spread it out. She had her home program she was working on. So in that sense, yes, I could treat anorgasmia if pain is one of the contributing factors. I have seen a fair amount of diminished orgasms where I think the intensity would be very helpful, because those women typically have a weak pelvic floor that's weak because it isn't, tight. It's like just weak,
just
either
weak, atrophy,
atrophied from disuse or from like post baby.
Yeah, let's talk about post. That was my next question. Why is it that women have babies, they go home from the hospital, and all they say is, "Oh, you can have sex in 6 weeks," and then all my friends are calling me, going, "What the hell do I do?" And or women are emailing me all the time, and men are like, "Why can't she have sex?" It's so misunderstood. Oh. And it's like, I can imagine how many women you have are like, what's wrong with me? It's like, you had a baby come out of your vagina. Let's just back up.
I know.
Let's settle down. Let's breathe. Like, what can you do to rebuild it again?
Yes.
That's some trauma.
I am. Oh, there's some serious trauma. And even backing up to the pregnancy.
Yes.
So you carry around this baby for 40 weeks, most people, and that you have a constant strain on your pelvic floor. So you're already, just being pregnant, regardless of how you delivery, you're at increased risk for certain things like incontinence.
Of course.
And prolapse. And
carry 40 pounds. You carry 40 weeks or how many pounds? About 40 pounds. A 40-pound baby. But if you're carrying, more weight on you and for that long, something's going to happen.
Yeah. So that's even just during pregnancy. And then we have our delivery. And there's different ways we can deliver. We can deliver vaginally or we can deliver via C-section. And both also carry their
pros and cons.
Yeah, their pros and cons and their consequences on the pelvic floor. So bringing it around to sex, then we can talk about other things after that too. But there was a study that was out a couple of years ago, huge study, over 1,200 women that was published in an international OBGYN journal. It basically was a survey and asked people, like, do you have painful sex? And when did you first start having painful sex, to kind of break it down simply? And they asked women at different time points, starting at 6 weeks, 3 months, 6 months, going all the way out to 18 months. So what they found was on a woman's first attempt of intercourse, whether it was at 6 weeks or 6 months, it was
After childbirth.
Okay. Yeah, 6 weeks or 6 months post-birth, that 89% of women had painful sex on that first attempt. Ugh. And it didn't matter the mode of delivery. So if you having a C-section did not make you immune. Okay. And in fact, women that had scheduled or emergency sections, and also women that had complicated vaginal deliveries, meaning that it wasn't like a natural spontaneous, it was assisted with a vacuum or forceps. Mm. So, sorry for all these people out there that haven't kids yet, but these things do happen. Those types actually reported higher incidence of pain than women that had the natural delivery.
Wow.
Natural vaginal delivery.
Okay.
So that was, and that was whether the first time was at 6 weeks or 6 months. Okay. So their first attempt was painful. 89% of the women said yes. And it almost makes me wonder, I'm sure it was 100%, but women maybe some were just like, it's supposed to be that way. So they normalized it.
Exactly. So we normalized so much pain, which is another reason why I'm so glad you're here to talk about this today, because I think that women don't have to have pain. Like, you don't have to live with any kind of pain, especially this kind of pain during sex, vaginally. There's not a lot of information about it. So
yeah, and in that same study, 18 months later, 4 out of 10 women were reporting ongoing pain. So this is well after they were done breastfeeding. And so, presumably hormones have stabilized. Okay, what happens when you deliver a baby? Everybody, regardless of how you deliver, your estrogen drops so that your body can start producing milk to breastfeed. Whether you choose to breastfeed or not, that's what your body's going to go through naturally until you stop that process. So when your estrogen drops, it's the same thing happens in menopause. You get atrophy tissue, which I hate that word, atrophy. They really need to think of a new term. So in my office, I prefer to actually say just like tissue thinning, tissue irritation.
That's so much better. Right.
And that's what happens when you're low estrogen. So some doctors will actually prescribe like an esterase after delivery to help with that. But then women don't understand why they're being prescribed it, so they don't use it.
Right.
So there's that lack of education.
There's
no information. And then, 18 months later, when most of these women have stopped breastfeeding for like 4 to 6 months prior, still 4 out of 10 are having pain. So by that point, their hormones should have normalized. What's left? So that goes back to what we were talking about earlier, that muscle guarding, right? Your muscles guard when you experience pain. So just because you're done breastfeeding does not mean that your pain will stop. And this is what doctors will say. They're like, just because you're breastfeeding, they'll normalize it. But there's other reasons even beyond just that hormonal aspect that can give them that initial pain and then produce that muscle guarding. If they have scar tissue from an episiotomy, their scar tissue can be painful. Or even like a C-section, some people just scar down really bad and their tissue becomes tight. And with C-sections, I see a lot more.
What do you see?
In addition to the painful sex, which totally confuses them. Like, I don't know why I have painful sex. I had a C-section. Like, everything's all right down there. Everything's all the same down there. Like, I don't know why I'm having problems. Like,
they don't see the connection.
They don't see the connection. But I see a lot of like urgency and urge incontinence with them. And the literature supports that too. Whereas with like a vaginal delivery, it's more stress incontinence is a little bit higher incidence. But with the urge incontinence, it's an urgency frequency. It's more of like a muscle overactivity issue around like the bladder and urethra. And then how that affects the nerves and the signaling that happens between the muscles and the bladder and how that gets processed in the brain. So
like, what woman wouldn't need this? Like, I feel like I feel like after childbirth, I know like in France, they send you home with something like that in control, right? They send you home with like a system, a Kegel exercise or something.
You know, I actually didn't know that, but I do know they recommend about 10 to 12 postpartum physical therapy visits for all women in France. But I didn't know they gave like an intone. I heard maybe if your insurance
probably makes you pay for it, but who knows? But at least they give you something. They talk about it, but here's like, bye-bye. Here's how you wrap your baby up like a burrito and then leave the hospital, but they don't tell you. Yes. Is it still called a burrito wrap? I remember my
friend. Oh, swaddle. Yeah, swaddle burrito. I love it.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is, but there's nothing about your vagina and healing.
And I push to like any OBGYN or urogynecologist that I meet, but mainly the OBGYNs because they're delivering the babies, that they should tell patients to come to pelvic PT for 3 sessions.
Yes.
As individualized, like get them full evaluation with some follow-up so they can get a lot of their questions answered, because the physicians, they don't have the time. And the physicians, honestly, and a lot of people don't know this, but they're given one lump sum for taking care of a woman during her delivery. And so, you know, they're not going to schedule all these like mini postpartum visits because they're not getting paid for any of it. And it sucks to think of it that way, but you know, they're only one person. They can only see so many people. Like any OBGYN practice you go into, how hopping are they? Like there's people all over the place.
It's kind of like not stretching after a race. If you're like a marathon runner, like you know, didn't stretch and you have pain, you're like, what? It's almost like every woman needs this post care. And it must be just so
carrying confusing. A baby is a marathon. Delivering, no matter how you deliver, is a marathon. And you know, it baffles my mind. And you know, I'm on a soapbox about this all the time because you know, if you injure anything else, like if you hurt your knee, you're going to go to PT. Just, you know, you just ran a mile and you should have run half a mile and you have tendonitis. They send you to PT, but you push a baby out of your vagina. And they liken it to like pushing a bowling ball out of your vagina. Right. Like there's a whole stress model on the pelvic floor that you can go on YouTube and find on like what is happening and how much like the ligaments and the muscles stretch. And no, like you're totally normal after 6 weeks, right? Like, okay, the uterus is back in place and there's no infection. Why would you be? And there's no attention given to that. And they've done lots of studies on like postpartum women. They've done MRIs and x-rays, and they found pelvic fractures in women after delivering.
Yeah.
It's like, how are you expected to like care for yourself, much less yourself and a little one, when you have a fracture in your pelvis and it hurts to walk?
Exactly. Like, and they're just like putting it aside because I got to take care of the baby and my husband. We're so good.
Exactly. And there was about like 4 to 6 weeks ago now, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, or ACOG, came out with updated guidelines on postpartum care, because we are last as far as industrialized nations in the world, and postpartum care, it's just really sad. You know, like there's that 1 6-week checkup and then boom, like
that's it. 6 week checkup, you're clear. Your vagina just bowling ball out of your vagina.
You're clear to have sex. Okay, there you go. 6 weeks later, fractured your pelvis. Okay, it's all right. Sorry, to have sex. In these updated guidelines, it was really great because now they're not just recommending a single 6 week encounter. They're recommending multiple encounters postpartum. The first of which should be within the first 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And they're looking at different realms like depression, like screening for postpartum depression, right, you know, away. Emotional health.
Don't wait till it happens.
Yeah, breastfeeding issues, any physical problems.
Why
are we
taking care of our women? I feel like, what can women do? What should they be looking for if they can't come see you? Not everyone's in LA, but how... I don't know. Are they everywhere? Pelvic floor therapists? People could pretty much find this.
Say they're everywhere.
Yeah, we've listeners all over the world too. But
yeah, but I mean, even in the U.S., I mean, you can get pretty rural, like pretty quick, and you're not going to find somebody that's maybe well equipped to treat.
You should train
all of
an army.
Things.
I think we need you to start training an army and dispatching them for every woman.
Yeah, but there are a lot, and there are resources you can go on and find a local pelvic floor physical therapist, like pelvicpain.org has a great one, and that's international. It can point to
pelvicpain.org. Okay.
Yes, and then the section on women's health for the American Physical Therapy Association also has a database. You know, and the thing with these databases are you really just have to be a member to be on it. So it doesn't guarantee that you're getting good care, but at least it guarantees that you're getting someone that's somewhat involved in their profession.
Right.
So it can be used as a screening tool when you sort of compare that to what you might find on Google using certain search terms. I think it's more you need to call the office and see if a therapist is willing to talk to you if you have specific questions or concerns. Me or any of my therapists in my office, if someone has questions, we are happy to talk to them, because like, what are you going to do? You're going to do what, where? Like, and I've been to physical therapy before. They imagine being in like a curtain gym area. Like
right. You're going to take care of this and this. Yeah. We'll stick your finger right.
Yeah. And you know, we have private treatment rooms and we really like explain to them the steps of the like intake and the evaluation process.
Okay. Now quick shout out to our sponsors. Thanks for supporting them. And we'll be right back. Let's talk about men, though, pelvic floor. I know you do see men. So what were some of the common challenges men come to for?
So
men suffer, too.
They do. They have pelvic floors, too. And, you know, with the chronic pain population, the most common diagnosis is something called non-bacterial prostatitis. So they've been ruled out for infection, and they're, like, doctors don't know what to do with them. Again, like it's
the
it's
pain like, in their prostate.
Well, or? Not just their prostate. So how they can present with that or like chronic pelvic pain is rectal pain, perineal pain, like beneath the scrotum, shaft pain, or they might describe urethral pain. They may describe pain with ejaculation or post-ejaculation, pain at the tip of the penis. They might also just have like groin pain or bladder pain, like suprapubic area pain. So all of those are very common presentations. And we do our intake the same way, asking kind of about like bowel and bladder. Because even though they might have like even urinary symptoms, we still have to check their bowel history because things like constipation can create urinary urgency just from like a physical internal pressure. So we don't assume because they have a urinary like symptom that their problem is urinary. So we do have to address bowel history as well. And, you know, sexual dysfunctions if present as well, those symptoms. And when we do the sort of the complete screen, what we typically find when we do the internal exam, so on men, there's only one place we can go with that. And I always tell them, like, I'm sorry, I did not put the muscles there, but this is where we got to go to treat them.
It's worth it.
They almost always have overactive pelvic floor in the same way. So, like, their later ani muscles. And
it could be any age, right? It doesn't just present at
any age. Oh, yeah, we have young men, like men in their 20s that come in the office. God, yeah. And it's
so they might go to the urologist and they're like, I don't know, we're not sure what it is, right?
Oh, they've usually seen several doctors. They've been on at least two or three rounds of antibiotics that haven't helped. And that's how it's like ultimately defined as non-bacterial. Because they're like, oh, it sounds like a UTI in women. I'll give you a prescription for antibiotics. And then they take the culture and then they call you back and like, oh, there was no infection. But and then the antibiotics, you know, didn't help, or sometimes they help a little bit. So they get in the cycle of taking antibiotics because of its effect on like reducing inflammation slightly, but it never like really ends the cycle. What's ultimately their problem is the overactive muscles. And the American Urology Association, which would be that like our association for, you know, the Physician Association in America, I should say, they only changed their guidelines a couple of years ago. In 2015, I believe they came out for treating urinary urgency and frequency and interstitial cystitis, painful bladder syndrome. So all of those things are kind of the same. It's just a spectrum of severity. And this would be for men or women. Let me just tell you, physical therapy, we used to be last before 2015. We used to be a last resort on this flow sheet that had like eight different things. And so many people wouldn't try it, right? Like last resort, like why would I do that? Nothing else worked.
Yeah.
Exactly. 2015, we moved up to basically first-line treatments.
Oh, good.
Right up there with behavioral modification, you know, like things that can make you pee a lot, like drinking a lot of alcohol, don't drink so much alcohol, or coffee or whatever, you know, so sort of basic education things on diet that might contribute, but pelvic floor physical therapy is under first line treatments now because why is something in the eighth position if it was the only thing that worked for people?
Exactly. Thank God.
Thank God.
They're recognizing you in all these organizations.
And that's 2015, but there's still so many urologists out there that don't know about updated guidelines. And this is my fear with the OBGYNs and these new guidelines that ACOG just came up with. Like, are gynecologists going to all get this information? You know, patients always have concerns about insurance reimbursing. Is insurance going to cover this?
Does
postpartum care. Well, that's a new change, so that remains to be seen.
Okay.
But I don't know. I don't have a lot of faith in insurance companies,
quite honestly.
I don't either,
but it's so worth it. It's like, it's your pelvic floor. It's the kind of thing I always say. If you don't have, you know, your health, what do you have? So it's important. And hopefully the insurance companies will show up and represent. Yeah. So also, I know that you're familiar with transgender pelvic floor health as well. So I don't think a lot of people really understand what this means and how you work with people who have...
Yeah, and it's pretty exciting, and it's a like a newer field I've been stepping into, and I've been to
busy.
Yeah, I got to know about all things pelvic floor, right? You know, wherever I can. And our place, I just really want it to be inclusive to people regardless of their gender identity, their sexual orientation. Like, if somebody is in pain or somebody has incontinence, like, I want to be able to help them. Nothing else matters.
Heather, Jeff Goat, I'm so glad you're here because this is information is just blowing my mind. I think a lot of my listeners, too, that we're just like, wow, like, your gynecologist, urologist, it's important you see them, but it's not everything. And what you're providing provides so much relief for so many people. And I would love it if you could stay, and we're going to answer some questions from listeners.
Sure.
And everyone can find Heather Jeffcoat at FeminaPT.com. And we're going to have all this in the show notes as well. And it's at the Lady Parts PT on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook.com/Femina Physical Therapy. Get all in the show notes. And we got this email from Johnny. And I just thought, I'm so glad you're coming in, because I thought, no, we can't just do this email for him. Let's call him and really help him, because he's going through a lot right now with his wife and some challenges she's having. Okay, so we have Johnny. He's 25 from South Dakota, and his wife has painful sex but doesn't want any foreplay to warm up. Hey, Johnny, thanks for calling in. You're here with Heather Jeffcoat, and your email just really interested me, and I really thought, God, we could help you here. So can you kind of give us some background, and then we could take it from there?
Yeah, absolutely. So my wife and I got married a couple of years ago, and when we got married, she actually developed a condition called... I forget what it's called. I think it's nutcracker syndrome, where her left renal vein is pinched. And I remember she was in so much pain for, months and months on end that she could hardly even walk. I mean, I remember pushing her in a grocery cart in the grocery store so that we could be together. So she was in a ton of pain. And every time we tried to have sex, any sort of movement was extremely painful. But every time we tried to have sex, it was just that. I mean, she couldn't hardly do anything. And now I think there's so much going on mentally and through past trauma that she's had before we were together. I think something may have happened to where she just doesn't want to, you know, it's so hard for her to have sex without comparing it to the pain that she had before.
No, that makes sense. Know? Okay. So, yeah, Heather, you want to go ahead with this? You're nodding here. And
Hey, Johnny, it's Heather Jeffcoat. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Thank you. Very interesting history. And so, I have a few questions. First being, so she no longer has pain with sex, you're saying? Or does she have pain?
She doesn't have pain with what she used to have, the same condition, but...
Right.
Now it takes a lot longer, because I think something mentally where, like, there have been times where, you know, it's been super hot and we've just had sex and it's been crazy and good and there's been no pain. But then during, like, the average day isn't usually like that, you know?
Okay.
And she doesn't want to have any foreplay to get it started. And so it just makes it tough.
So then she will.
That hurts even a little bit.
Right. Got it.
Up.
Oh, I get it. Right.
Okay.
So that's what I was wondering, is she sort of experiencing ongoing pain? I understand her primary problem resolved, but it sounds like she still has some secondary, maybe like vaginal muscle guarding. And if she's well lubricated, then it's not a problem. But if she's not well lubricated, then it becomes painful for her, even a little bit of pain, and she shuts down. Is that right?
Well, yeah. Yeah. And we do use lube. Every time. I mean, because of this show, every single time.
Huge fan of lube. Lube on every nightstand.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm with you on that.
Thanks.
So,
yeah, but there is still pain.
Right.
Right. I mean, because there's other things that happen during arousal with the vaginal canal. So it does lengthen. So, you know, it's not just lubrication that you're missing out on, or that she's missing out on in that sense. So, you know, one thing, it sounds like her problem's probably pretty mild as far as the physical part of it, because if she can have pain-free sex sometimes, then that's a really good sign that if she maybe addressed the physical component just by doing some like simple internal stretching techniques with a dilator, and you can find if you search dilator kit on Amazon, maybe if she worked with those for a few weeks and could see that she can have regular penetration with gradually larger sizes, that maybe, and hopefully the kit is equivalent in the largest size to you, that might help break down some of her fear around pain with intercourse and like the pain that she's having with penetration. But she shouldn't skip, you know, why she wants to skip foreplay if foreplay is what gets her lubricated and helps her experience less pain or no pain. That part is
right
outside of my scope. And yeah, you know, I would perhaps say,
yeah, I mean, if she's had any, has she had any therapy around this? Was there any earlier trauma in her life? Did this just happen?
There was some major trauma that happened before we were together. And we've kind of had to deal with that for a long time, and just making sure that she knows that she can trust me. And I'm just trying to show her constantly that I'm safe. And,
You're such a good partner to her, it sounds like. You sound like really loving and really supportive, Johnny. And it sounds like it's been kind of rough right now. And I'm wondering if she's had any therapy to deal with the trauma.
Because we've had a bit, not a lot, but...
Because that's what I would recommend.
The hardest part is financially right now, because we're still young, and so it costs so much to be able to do stuff like that. And so we do it when we can, but... Yeah. You can't get it on the regular schedule.
Do you guys have insurance? Because here's the thing. I think for trauma, I mean, untreated trauma will just continue to persist. There's some great therapies for trauma, too, like EMDR is a great therapy that can work for people. But I would say if you have health insurance, a lot of plans will pay for 10 to 20 sessions. And if you think about the things you spend money on, I'm a huge advocate of, like, cut back on your Netflix subscription, even though I love Netflix. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, it literally is going once every few months. It's the kind of thing where she's got to go every week for months, maybe even a year. But then she's dealing with it now. Like, I'm so glad. One of the best things I think I ever did for myself was starting therapy in my 20s. And I couldn't believe I had to commit to this one therapist for a year. And I did. And I ended up going for like 10, not just her, 15 years I was in therapy. But the point is, it literally is the best work. And when you've never done it, you don't really get it. And you're like, what am I, why? You know, but if she, this to me sounds like she's doing a lot of the physical things. And Heather certainly has some good advice here. But it's this emotional stuff that no matter how supportive you are, Johnny, she's going to have to do that on her own without you probably to start.
Yeah.
So if you could let her
know. That makes sense. I know we've actually tried the dilators before.
Okay, good.
And we went to a therapist for it, actually, and she said that there was three centers where the pain could be, and it was in all three. And so, there's...
Which were what were the three areas? Are you talking... Yeah, do you remember the three areas? Like, were they all in the pelvic floor, or...
I think so.
Okay.
So it's hard to remember, because that was like 6 months to a year ago.
Okay. Right. And, you know, and also, so was this a pelvic floor physical therapist that you saw, or a different type of therapist? Because there's different ways to teach how to use the dilators, too. So can you tell me briefly how she was using them? Was she just inserting them and holding them for a certain amount of time and then removing it? Or was there more to it than that?
So it was pretty simple. It was where she would just work her way up from small to the larger ones. And then it would just kind of sit in there. And I think she would practice Kegels and just like squeezing and trying to compress against the dilators.
Okay. So Heather's nodding here.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm nodding and I'm shaking. And I'm shaking all sorts of things and nodding. So that actually, that protocol goes against what I think works best for somebody that has painful intercourse. It's more of a like a desensitization program, and I don't think that her problem is probably like her nerves overfiring that need to be desensitized. She probably has, from what it sounds like, you know, part of this past trauma, you can get muscle shortening and muscle guarding, but also this pain that she had in the area where you had to wheel her around. You can get muscle guarding. That's what happens when you have pain in an area. Muscles guard. And we talked about that earlier in the show. Mm-hmm. And so you have to approach them like muscles that are guarding or in spasm. And how would that be treated? So think about physical therapy anywhere else in your body, like your neck. If your neck is in spasm, you don't stretch your neck and hold it for 10 minutes, right? That actually makes the tightening and the guarding worse. It makes the muscles more sore. So you have to approach it more like how you would treat a muscle that's guarding in that way. And so I have a completely different program in how to use the dilators. It's not like starting with one and going up to the largest size all within a session and holding them for several minutes. It's doing stretches and internal stretching techniques, and then there's like more to it with progressing to larger sizes.
So could that something that Johnny maybe is in South Dakota, but could he, how about your book, would that be helpful? Sex Without Pain, or
Right.
Anything on your website?
Yeah, exactly. And okay. So my book, one of the main reasons I wrote it was to increase accessibility of this information to people when they're in areas that, one, either don't have access to that type of care, or two, financially can't afford it. Because even if your insurance
Can we send Johnny a book? My treat.
Sure. Let's
send Johnny, can we get your address? We're going to send you a book. I think that would help you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Is there anything else? Was that so? I didn't mean to cut you, but I think that could be helpful because I love that he brought this up. That Johnny, yes. That you've been doing it maybe the wrong way, and Heather's like a specialist here.
Yeah,
she's amazing. She's an expert.
Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the thing with this type of pain, and people are like, "Oh yeah, I've tried dilators before." I'm always like, "Well, how did you try them?"
Yeah, it's so true. It's so nuanced.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, Johnny. Mm-hmm. We're going to send you a book. We're going to get your address, and I hope this was helpful to you. So will you let us know how it goes and kind of look at
it. Really was, yeah. Thank you so
okay
much.
No, thank you, honey. Thank you. We're thinking about you. Thanks for calling in, Johnny. Have a great night. Bye.
Okay. This
is from Jamie, 35, in Pennsylvania. Dear Emily, I had twins via C-section, and then I had a baby boy delivered vaginally with a fourth degree tear. He is now 9 months and the twins are 2. My sex life is awful. My husband has been really upset with me and thinks I don't want to be intimate with him. But the truth is, every time it really hurts. So much it makes me completely tense and I want to stop. It hurts afterwards too when I have to urinate as well. I just want us to have good sex again. I'd do anything at this point because it would save our marriage. Okay, thanks, Jamie. I think clearly she has to communicate, you know, to her husband that she still loves him. She's still attracted to him. It's not about him, but he has to understand that he's, you know, she's in a lot of pain and he's feeling unappreciated. And obviously he loves her, wants to help her, but this just sounds like, you know, she doesn't know what to do. Her vagina's been through trauma. This sounds like serious trauma. I'm like,
yeah, so
I experienced a little secondhand here, yes, listening to this.
So I'd want to know from her, is she still breastfeeding? Because then she has lower estrogen. She might want to ask her doctor for a prescription of Estrace or something to help restore some of that estrogen in the area, which will help plump up the tissue, make it less irritated, those things we talked about at the beginning of the show. And if she isn't breastfeeding, she still might have experienced pain early on. She might have some of that muscle guarding. So she should try to, you know, get a pack of dilators, my book, try that program, see if it helps, or find a local pelvic floor physical therapist.
So everything we've talked about, don't just stick to going to the gynecologist.
No. And then also on top of that, she's got little ones and she's probably sleep deprived.
Yeah.
So sleep makes every negative sensation more heightened. And so even a little bit of discomfort your body will take in is just like that much more pain and discomfort.
God,
so,
being a mom.
You know, hopefully he's being supportive and, you know, helping with the child care duties. And
yeah.
I always encourage all my patients, whether they have kids or not, with their partners to, you know, what can your partner kind of do? Like while you're using the dilators, maybe can they like cook, or maybe even just order out and go pick up the food.
Exactly.
So you can like do your dives or like take the kids out of the house for 30 minutes. And I know that's not the way you want to spend your 30 minutes of free time, but you know, it's a short-term commitment for a long-term,
long-term benefit. What I love about your book, Sex Without Pay, you guys, it's not like a massive novel that you have to cut through here. I looked at it. I'm already like, there's a great picture. It's about
100 pages.
And it looks like there's so much in here that can truly help people with sex without pain. Okay, thank you. Let's go on to it. So, Jamie, yeah, I think you got to communicate to him. And it sounds like you, I mean, 9 months, the twins, a lot of stress going on in your relationship, but this has to be a priority. And just explain to him that you're doing everything you can and if he can support you.
Yeah. And lube, lots of lube.
Lots of lube. I love lube. Okay, so we've got one more. This is Sarah, 24, Virginia. Dear Emily, I have a question about masturbation. After clitoral masturbation, is it normal to be experienced what feels like menstrual cramps? They don't last for long, but can be kind of painful. I love the podcast. It's become part of my weekly listening. Thanks in advance. I've heard this before. I've heard women say, I've got pain and cramps after masturbation. Yeah. What do you think?
So I am so glad that this question was asked because we didn't touch on it during our main talk. So, you know, you have the different stages of arousal and your pelvic floor muscles are involved through arousal, excitement, plateau, orgasm. Your pelvic floor muscles are involved every step of the way. If they're overactive and they don't relax well, it can produce a cramping sensation in the pelvic area. It can feel like uterine cramping, maybe low back pain. So, I mean, it could be a sign of a high tone pelvic floor. I would also want to ask her, do you have any other symptoms like constipation? Do you have urinary frequency or pain with urination or feeling like after you pee, you still have to go pee? Like I have so many more questions for her beyond just that.
Okay.
Because she might have normalized all these other things.
Exactly.
We like,
do this.
But this dysorgasmia thing, she's like, oh, this is not normal. But she might have all these other components too that I would want to know about. But
okay.
It could definitely be a sign of a overactive pelvic floor.
Okay. That is, yeah, it could, I think that's a really good point. And I think what I'm trying to drive home here today with Heather is that a lot of people, men and women, we normalize pain. And we don't even remember that was painful because we're like, oh, I always have a cramp after I orgasm. No, that is not normal, you guys. You don't have to live with that. So she kind of undo this, getting some help, seeing a doctor that's not her gynecologist, pelvic floor. Is there anyone? I mean, and I feel like you're the one who would know. You and a pelvic floor specialist.
I mean, sometimes physical I feel therapy. That way. I kind of like do coordinate the care. For a lot of patients because like they might be sent from their OB-GYN or they might be self-referred and I just make their OB-GYN sign off that they don't have an infection so that I know I can, that's been ruled out. And then I have to go back to the gynecologist and say, well, you know, do you think like maybe a suppository, like a muscle relaxant with a suppository might benefit this person? You know, I'm not a physician, so I can't say, oh, you should prescribe this. I can just be like, well, maybe do you think this is what I found? You know, I try to like play the, you know, like professional, walk that professional line. And but I do help coordinate care and make other referrals to other providers, whether it be like a psychotherapist that may help them or a sex therapist or a urogynecologist.
It's a village, if they
need
it all.
If they need an injection. We didn't even talk about injections in the pelvic floor.
Yeah.
Another time, maybe.
Yeah, yeah, like the injections, like for pain or like the O shot, P shot. Do you know about those?
Yes, but I'm talking about for pain. For so pain. Botox in the pelvic floor, or like a lidocaine derivative in the pelvic floor to help with pain and trigger points.
Wow, I've heard about some of this stuff. Okay, yeah. God, there's so much you have to. I feel like we could do another show. I feel like you should. You guys, let me know if you have other questions because I think we could set up a whole other show because Heather's actually near me here in Los Angeles. Thank you so much, Heather Jeffcoat. I think that this has been fascinating, and I think we're just scratching the surface here of what you can do. So is there any last people can find you? It's not going to be all on the website, feminapt.com, and your books. And
yeah, and the books are on Amazon if you want to print, or if you want a PDF immediately, you can't wait those 2 days. You can go to sexwithoutpainbook.com and get a PDF download immediately.
Amazing.
For $20. So.
Okay, great. And we'll have this all in the show notes. Thank you so much for being here. This was great. And thank you, everybody, for listening to the show. Let me know what you think. If you've got questions, if you want to hear more guest shows, more emails, I'd love to hear from you guys. Just thank you all. And thanks to my amazing team, Ken, volunteer Sarah, producer Jamie, and Michael. Was it good for you? Email me, feedback@sexwithemily.com.